This is the Tanana Yukon Historical Society making a tape in Mrs. Dalney's home on Sheep Creek Road in Fairbanks, Alaska. This tape is a recording of the life of Mr. Robert Henry Jones of the Koyukuk Country. It is January the 12th, 1966. And we will now turn the meeting over.
1967, please meet.
67, correct, yeah. You are, Bob. Gee whiz, I'm behind times. January the 12th, 1967. Robert, how old are you?
83.
Where were you born?
In North Wales.
North Wales. And what's your mother and father's name?
My father's name was Edward Jones, and my mother's name was Amelia Jones.
You any brothers and sisters?
Three brothers and one sister besides me.
Give us their names.
Evan Llewellyn Jones died in the St. Joseph Hospital here.
Oh, here in town.
Yeah. And Thomas Lloyd Jones died when he was 12 years old in Wales.
Wales.
Yeah. And William John Jones died 10 years ago in Wales.
In Wales.
Yeah. And my sister, Helen Jones, died when she was 14 years old in Wales.
Where were you raised? Where was your school days?
National School, Fairbanks. Slumville, B.C.
Where was that?
Slumville, Vale of Fluid.
You attended school there?
Yeah.
Can you remember your name of the schoolhouse, your teachers, or anything?
Christmas Jones was the name of one teacher, and that's all I remember, the name of teachers.
How old were you when you left there?
17.
17?
Yeah.
Now, tell us about your life experiences between 17 and 20, say.
17, I got home. I was home. My brother was home from Dawson. He'd been on the rush to the Yukon, and he came home on a vacation. And in February 1900, he started, and I came with him back to Dawson.
From where?
Wales, North Wales.
From North Wales?
Yeah.
You crossed the Atlantic?
In a boat.
You remember the name of it?
No, I don't.
You landed in?
Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston?
Yeah.
Now, how did you cross to Alaska?
Well, we came by train to Vancouver, B.C., and from there to Skagway, by boat.
In what year?
It was in 1900.
And now tell us about going from Skagway to Dawson.
From Skagway we rode in the train for a short time. I don't remember for sure what distance, you understand. And then we had to walk. But there was packs, so I think it was horses packing. What little we had wasn't very much. And then we got to the other side, and then we got a stage again, all the way to Dawson.
What did you do when you arrived there?
My brother had a piece of ground there, 34 below Upper on Dominion, bench claim. And we just laid around till the water run, and we started working. Then he had a partner in the claim, and his Pratt had bought his son, you might as well say, with him. It was his son-in-law. And him and me, his son, and me and my brother, we worked together.
Tell us about your life in Dawson, the things that happened to you.
Well, I surely enjoyed it there, in Dawson.
Any things of interest happened? Any special occasions?
Not that I know, I'm only working every day, 10 hours, you understand.
How long did you stay there?
I stayed there until
1902. 1902.
I took a trip back to the old country, to Wales. I was there about 3 months, and then back to Dawson.
Back to Dawson?
Yeah.
And back to what creek?
Dominion, same place.
Same place.
Yeah. I used to go to the roadhouse there, the Remington Roadhouse, and play cards with Tony Nordale and his brother Alex Nordale. And I knew Ed Herring there and John Herring, their sons, and I guess they're on Fairbank here now. And I knew Bob Bartlett's father, Ed Bartlett.
Good.
He knew me, he called me Kid them days.
Kid?
Yeah. But I never had the pleasure of meeting Bob.
Mm-hmm. What did Mr. Bartlett do?
Help preaching. He was in the preaching business. And I forgot the name of his driver. I used to know him too, just by sight, you know. Mm-hmm. He died in Fairbanks here not long ago.
Hmm. When did you leave Dawson?
I left Dawson for Stampede to Fairbanks. My brother went over the trail, and he wrote and said he was going to make a camp, and he had a lease, him and Tom Williams, on Discovery Bench on Clary. So I left in the spring with the first boat. I came there in the time of the Blue Parky Man.
Tell us about it.
Well, there was a... When I was in Dawson, the MPs were very particular. You know, Soapy Smith had a bunch following him. And the Mounties were tracing them as they come over the line. Well, there was a man stepped where, close to where we were there, Tom Hanlon. I remember his name well because he used to come to the cabin once in a while. And pretty soon he was a Mounties there. And he was going by another name, but the Mounties told him his right name. It was Tom Hanlon. And they told him to get 10 minutes if he had anything to pack up and go with them. So he went with them and they showed him over the line. Mm. As quick as they possibly could. But he wasn't the first, there were several more. But when I went to Fairbanks on the first boat, I seen the freighter there, Sam Hart. An old time, very old time, from Montana. And I said, is there any truth about the Blue Parky Man we hear on the holdup? No, nothing, 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 Bob. Well, I'd ride with you. Oh, no, you don't ride with me. It might take me 3 days to get to Clary. He says, he was in the freighting business. So, when I got out to go, I was going next day. And I collected quite a bit of money in Dawson for the boys that left over the ice, wouldn't wait for the pay. I had that in my pocket, collected it all. So, when I was going by Columbia Hotel, we made a turn there in the old days to hit the road, to cross the slough there. I remember well. So, there was Tom. He says, you're going to Clary, Bob? Yeah. I'll go with you. By gosh, I didn't like that. I had a shotgun on my back, a friend in Boston had given me the fever shotgun. I had it on my back in a case, of course I had a box of shells. And anyhow, we went along. When we got a little bit from Fairbanks, Tom says, wait, sit down, you got any money on you? No, no. He says, I got $5 here, I'm going to put it in my shoe because that Blue Parky Man ain't going to get this. So that put a little bit of shivers in me. I was afraid of Tom more than anybody. So I was watching Tom all the time, kind of. So we got to a roadhouse in Fox. I forgot the name, Mrs. McGillicuddy, Miss McGillicuddy, two Irish women in the home. And we had dinner there, they knew me from Dawson, from the creek. And they said, Bob, you know, have you got any money on you? No. I know on your face now, you're blushed all over. I know you have. You be careful, there's lots of holdups here. They call him the Blue Parky Man. I said, I heard nothing. They won't get nothing on me. When we're going up the hill, you know, towards Clary, there was a turn in the road. And Tom spotted the man's head in the brush. And he says, there he is, well, wait then. I took the shotgun out the case on my back, loaded it. I didn't, excited, you know. I didn't know but what the safety was on. I put my finger on triggers and both barrels turned off.
Both barrels turned off.
And I don't know which is getting worse, the Tom or me. And, you know, I loaded again, I want Tom to go ahead and he would do it. So we went, we never seen the man.
Oh.
We went to the junction on the divide, you know, where Fairbanks Creek come on.
Clearly.
Go down there. Tom, I forgot the man on horseback, said, hello, boys. Sometimes I remember his name. He was collecting for the bank, being to Fairbanks Creek. And when we ran down the other side here, we met three or four horses coming up the hill. One stopped and asked us questions. Have we seen somebody? We told him the truth. I thought I'd heard somebody or something, you know. So when I told him the truth, he just laughed and he said, Tom something, I forgot his name, or Jim, had been held up. He'd been collecting for the bank. And that there he was, you know, I bet you waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to Clary and the boys were there, they called me all kinds of things for not putting the money in the bank in Fairbanks. He said they're packing it along, you know, problem. So I went to work right away with my brother, Tommy Brother and Tom Williams on Discovery Bench.
On Discovery Bench?
Yeah. He had a lease on Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Now shut it off anyhow.
Was it good ground?
Yeah, very good. 50% straight lease.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How long were you there?
I was there, I forgot the years now. Anyhow, they caught the blue party man and I was on the same boat going out.
You were on the same boat with him?
Yeah, they caught him, you know, they were sending him to jail.
Oh, yeah. This boat was leaving from where?
From Fairbanks.
Oh, steamer.
Yeah.
Stern Wheeler.
Yeah.
Going to St. Michael.
No, by the way, Dawson.
Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
And where'd you go next?
I took a trip outside and came back. But I always came back by Dawson.
From where?
Fairbanks or any place.
You always came back by dog?
Yeah. Knew lots of the old boys and all that. I knew them.
Where'd you pick up the dogs?
Oh, no. I came in the fourth in the fall, in the spring. The next year, after I went out, I picked up dogs in Dawson.
Oh, in Dawson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother said that Opa Country was going to make a camp. So I came with a dog team to Fairbanks. Three dogs.
From Dawson?
Yeah,
from to Fairbanks.
Yeah.
Tell us about the route.
I don't remember. There was a mail trail and a good route then, did you know.
What route did you come in to enter Fairbanks? Did you come down the Good Pasture, the South Shore, or what?
No. Follow the Yukon.
Oh, you went to Turtle?
By Eagle and Turtle.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
and then over Eagle Pass.
Either. Oh, boy, there was a time there. The man in the road that says, boys, don't cross that divide today. There was two more dog teams behind me all the time. They had 11 in one and 12 in the other. But by God, they couldn't get the best of me with three dogs. But I looked after my dogs, you understand.
You only had three?
That's all.
And you were the biggest dog of all then?
No, nothing. I had one dog, they all called him as big as a calf in Fairbanksia.
Hmm.
He weighed 150 some odd pounds.
Ooh.
And he wasn't fat. Anyhow, the two were just like rabbits alongside of him, you know, but they were good workers.
Mm-hmm.
So, I ran in the road, also, I remember well, that the Eagle, before we crossed the Eagle Divide, you know. He said, boys, I wouldn't go over there if I was you today. I wouldn't cross it. Well, these two fellas there said, oh, he's gentrified, kid, get trade for his road out. You know, keep us there. He says, it's pretty windy on the divide there today, boys. So anyhow, they didn't listen, so I didn't. I pulled out and went. And the old fellow was a very nice man. I remember he had white whiskers. And he said his son was on the other side of the ride on Safe Creek, I think the name was, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
With some mules and doing some wood hauling or something for the man there. So, he said, when you go up there, you won't have no dogs. Just an hook 'em. They'll follow you, yeah. The wind would blow you away so fast you don't know what happened to it. And I listened to him, you know, and I was young them days. And I did just because the dogs would follow me anyhow. But there was no snow, nothing but bare ground there, you know.
Ooh, blown.
Boy, yes, and it was blowing. So away we went. I got in time to jump on the runners behind. It was a blowing, believe me. I wish I had stayed in the camp. So down the other side we went and fine. So I hooked on the dogs. And pretty soon I heard a dog howling and then all kinds of, these fellas didn't unhook, one had 11 and the other 12 dogs. And of all the tanglement you've ever seen, one got to the other side, he was this man's son. He was with a team of mules, if I remember right, in Hollywood. That's the first time that I seen Dan Callahan's wife and daughter. On the Chattanooga, they were in the road, they were going to Eagle for the summer, I think. He always went to fish and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Dan Callahan.
Yeah.
Wife?
And daughter.
Daughter.
Yeah.
You came on into Cleary.
came to Fairbanks. No, it's the second time.
Well, that's the second
time. Yeah, but I came by ferry, all right. Mm-hmm. And I came to 6 or 7 on Goldstream.
7 on Goldstream.
Yeah. Jim Lawton was an old partner of mine in Dawson several times. You know, different times running into him and friends. I stopped with him on Goldstream.
7 below or above on Goldstream?
7 below.
7 below. That would be below Pedro's claim?
Oh yeah, I guess so. I never knew where Pedro's claim was. Mm-hmm.
Could you pick it out now if we drove out there?
No, I couldn't. And look, everything changed so much, you know. And I couldn't pick out even the claims I was on Dominion for years, you know. The willows and everything in the buildings I've gone, you know, is different.
Yeah. How long did you keep your dogs?
Oh, I kept the dogs through the offshore country. They went on the boat with me. I went from with them. I stayed, the strike was on in Fairbank that year.
Strike?
Yeah.
Miners?
Miners strike.
For more wages?
More wages. Well,
what year was this?
I don't remember. I can't remember the years of it.
Yeah.
My brother had writing all the time about Roper Country makes a camp. He's funded, you know. So I went to Roper Country with the first boat. Coleman was manager of the NC then. Now, and I had 10 ton of stuff.
To get to the Roper Country from Fairbanks by boat, what route did you take?
Went down to Holy Cross. And then through, there's a cut off, the Shacklock through, I think they cut it, into the Inoka River, or Hydrod River, whichever one you call it. Inoka River, they call it.
Inoka.
Yeah. There are several boats on the Stampede, that's right.
Then you went up to Iditarod?
No. The Hydrod goes to the right as you go up and Inoka to the left.
Yeah. And that puts you into?
Into
Ophir.
Trittle. When, you see, the farthest steamboat could go, I forgot. It was only, there was no town or nothing. When she landed, they called up one place a trading post, Old Simmel. But that was below that.
Old what?
Simmel. S-I-M-M-E-L.
S-I-M-M-E-L. Old Simmel.
Yeah. And the boat landed below that anyhow and unloaded everything on the bar, on the side, you know. Because she couldn't go no further. So, there was boys in the boat there that was going right straight up. And they said, I sent word to my brother I was there with the stuff. So, I had a tent, I had everything, and we pitched the tent, and there was a young fellow with me that his father, or he used to work in the library in Fairbanks, I forgot his name, and we used to go in the boat that I took up there and fish on the river at Port of Time. So here comes a teamster, and I don't know, with the scows and horses, and I don't remember the name of that outfit. And this boy got a job riding the horse. When we went fishing first, he used to swim, like jump overboard and swim under the boat and everything. Could swim like a fish. So he got a job riding the horse. And just not only a few miles above the camp, the horse got tangled up some way. And he slipped onto the horse. The horse must have kicked him in swimming. Or hurt. He was down right there.
Down right there?
Right there. Hmm. Not a nice boy. And on the next boat in, here comes it. He told that his father or his uncles are coming. And they came in, and that's how the news they got. And we got the body out. We could see it in the clear water down below. And we got the body out, and they went back to Fairbanks. Hmm. There were several boats coming in then, right along, you know. And then me and my brother freighted the same ton of stuff into Ophir.
So you spent some time in Ophir?
Yeah, from.
Remember the creek you were on?
Oh, yeah.
What was it?
On Sluice Creek.
Sluice Creek?
Yeah.
How long did you stay there?
We prospected the little. We spalted on Spalding Creek and we prospected on Ophir, and we prospected. Well, the best of prospecting on Ophir, I don't know what made me when I was going to Fairbanks. You know, see Fairbanks, it was after the Fairbanks fire. And I seen several pieces of brass being melted. And I took 3 of them. You know, you could pick them up. And they were good brass nuggets. So I put it in my sack and I took them to Ophir. And I threw them under my bunk. There was a fellow, Mac Norton, me and my brother, I've got to name the other man now. And we were going to prospect this spring. So my brother says, you know Huey Marlin? Yeah. And Huey Hutchison? Yeah. They used to be farming on Clary in the good days, you know. They're mining above here somewhere. And I forgot the name of the Frenchman. My brother was keeping books for him. He couldn't read and write. So anyhow, let's go up and visit them. I said, all right. So I didn't know what made me. I put a good sized box of nuggets in my pocket. And all they were glad to see me, one and one of them pretty soon came out the hall. And he said that he was going to shut the water and we had to go eat and have my tea. But in the meantime, this fellow was hoisting the buckets and I threw the nugget in the box. The water hadn't been making very good, you know, in the start. So they wanted to stay and I said, no, I'm going. So when we were a little ways off, you know, the other fellow had come out the hall and shut the water. Woo! Jesus Christ, here's a big one. Come back and see it. No, 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 we don't. I've seen lots of big ones in Dawson, I said, lots of them. So and we kept on going. In 2-3 days, I said, they came over and asked if one of us would go and help them. They'd run into way better money than they used to have. So I wouldn't go, my brother wouldn't go. I never said to my brother nothing.
Sure.
And McNaughton, he went. So, after he'd worked there a few days, I said, we'll never show you a big nugget. No. So they dumped a sack of potatoes out and she was casting there. That ain't your big nugget, is it? Well, sure is. I see that in the box. Bunk, since we built this bunk. That's a bad nugget. Brother, I had to keep out their sight for a long time. I'd have got it too. Everybody in a big farming from Tralee, think no brass from gold. Picked it up in the box, you see.
What is a good way to test for brass?
Oh, we can tell by the weight.
Just by the weight, it's too light.
Yeah.
Too light.
But you pick it up on the box, it's natural, you understand?
Sure.
You think it's there.
You think it's going to be gold.
You know, Choco was the name of the man who owned the ground, I remember now. And my brother was kind of keeping books for him a little. And they hadn't paid royalty, so Choker wanted a nugget for the royalty. So Choker had been into town, and every time he'd go to town, he'd get drunk, too often. And he was coming back, and he was going, it's about them not giving nuggets. My brother told him the truth. That's brass popped through in the box. So when they were coming back, they thought they were going to give him with Choker then. Choker, we'll give you that nugget for back royalty. Keep your goddamn brass. I want gold when you want to pay me. That's the whole thing. I'd keep out of sight for long.
This is about 1910 or 12.
Yeah. 1909.
Nine?
Yeah.
How long did you stay in the Ophir country?
Till 1913.
13?
Yeah.
What induced you to leave?
Well, I tell you the truth, I don't know. Just, I always am that way. When I get through in something, away I go someplace else. My feet are itching out.
Where'd you head for?
That time I head for Wales.
Went back to Wales?
Oh yeah, I went back to Wales.
Oh,
stayed there 2-3 months, come back again.
Gee.
Landed in Dawson.
You crossed the Atlantic many times?
10 times.
Ten
no,
times.
11 times.
11 times.
If I go back, it would be the 12th, yeah.
Hmm.
I took 5 trips there.
So when you left Wales, you came back to Alaska again?
Yeah, oh yeah, no country like Alaska. I don't care where you go.
What'd you look for when you came back?
Oh, prospecting and looking up. I came to Dawson and I seen a friend then, he says, he had a piece of ground, but the groups had an option on it. But if I wanted to go with him on a lease, that winter I would go. Sid Mace, his name was. So I said, my God, I don't mind. So I went in with him. We did pretty fair, but we got notice all long before we quit, you know, through the dump, that the groups were going to take up the option. And they gave plenty of notice from that. So, anyhow, after we sluiced up the dump and everything, I took a trip to Dawson, to the city. And I seen a friend I knew in Ophir country, he'd been in the cycle. And he said he was going back. I said, how's it look up there? Oh, look all right, Bob. I had the lease there last winter. He'd made about 4,000 or 5,000. And on Nolan Creek. And he was in with Vic Hill and his wife, and Hans Christensen. Mrs. Hill is here now. Vic is dying in Fairbanks. I haven't seen her yet. She must be pretty old now. So anyhow, I says, when are you going back there? Yeah. I says, I'll go with you. So I went up and packed up, took a pack on my back, of course, and went on the steamboat down to Beaver.
Beaver?
Yeah. And got a map. There was a fellow by the name of Jump Off, they called him. I don't know his right name.
Jump Off?
Yeah, in Beaver, he's lame. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, we got a cabin in Beaver. And we went into a cabin to stay for a day or two. So I went to he asked me one day, him and I commenced to talk. And I told him I was going to the car club, could you give me a map? I heard there was a trail clean to Carroll. That's 75 miles to Carroll from Beaver.
Carroll?
Yeah. And on Chandler. And he gave me a map from there to Weissman, you know, to Colford. So, but he says, I got a job for you, yeah? Could you want to make $100 easy? Well, I'm always willing to make $100, but I want to know what it's for. So he says, I'll tell you, I'll give you a pack and you'll go over here, you'll make it in a day easy. And there's a place tree there, you go there and put the pack down there and hoot like an owl. I said, yeah, that don't sound good to me. What is it? The man will come there and get the pack and pay the $100. Oh, no, nothing doing, boy. I said, a bullet would be cheaper than the $100. Well, he said, it's Argo Bill, and the marshal is after him. I said, nothing to do with it.
So I came back. What was his name?
Argo Bill. A-R-G-O, I guess.
E-R?
A-R-G-O.
A-R-G-O.
Yeah.
Argo Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
And the marshal was after
him. Yeah, marshal was after him.
And he was sending grub over to him.
Yeah, so sending grub to him.
And he'd robbed somebody and had $100.
I heard he got shot afterwards.
Shot. Mm-hmm. I'll be darned.
Two pipe water.
Now what... You're in Beaver now.
Yeah, in Beaver. And Jump Off gave a good map. It was easy to go to Cheddar on Chandler. It was a road. You know, just a brush cut. From there to Weissman was a Colfoot. From the Dye Cook. He gave me a good map and we followed it that time. Mm-hmm. And we had to find out. I had a sitchel to that. And we got plenty of them.
Now, how much did you have with you? What kind of equipment?
Didn't have nothing to speak of, but I always carried a gun, and I always carried dried potatoes, dried onions.
You have a knapsack like we use nowadays?
Yeah,
gunny sack or what?
Yeah, no, just a gunny sack, of course. A cold oil can I always liked. My brother learned me that.
What month was this?
It was in September.
September?
Yeah.
And you're starting for the Koyukuk country from Beaver?
Yeah.
And all you've got is your rifle and a 5-gallon oil can.
Yeah, with a little grub with it.
With a little grub in it. What do you sleep in?
Didn't sleep in anything, just laid down.
Just laid down?
Yeah.
Don't even carry a blanket?
No, nothing. No, I didn't, honest.
Oh, gosh.
No, I had nothing. Too much of all. If it rains, some things get wet, you know, and if you ain't got camels.
How many days was it to the Koyukuk?
I don't remember for sure. I couldn't tell you. We took it easy.
What do you eat on the trail 3 times a day under those conditions?
Well, we ate twice. And I had sitchels that I told you. Spruce ends. You've got little onions, you've got little rice, and you can make a good meal. Mm-hmm. If you've got dried onions, you can always make a meal. And we lived good.
And you shot the spruce ends with a rifle?
Oh, sure, 22. 22,
oh, 22 you carried.
Yeah, 22 sitchels.
Mm-hmm. Now this puts you into the Koyukuk.
Yeah.
Now tell us about your prospecting around there.
Well,
what creek were you on first?
I went on Hammond River first.
Hammond River?
Yeah. I worked there that winter in the wet ground, timbering for Vern Watts.
Oh, that was one of your first incomes,
was working there. Yeah, working there in the winter. That ground had to be very rich, about $20 for a foot to pay. It had to be timbered sides and roof, and the pumps are going all the time for a long time till she dried up, but that would take a long time. And it always had to be timbered.
What kind of a pump did they have?
I don't remember for sure right now. About a 3-inch discharge, I think it was.
Gasoline?
No, steam.
steam.
All steam.
All steam.
Yeah.
Because there was no gas in that day, or no steam, no gas engine.
No.
How'd they get that stuff up there?
By scouts on the river.
There was already...
Yes,
navigation.
My first ship on that. Mm-hmm. And then from there I bought in on Pingle Bank on Norman. I bought in there.
On Pingle?
Yeah. I bought 4 inches for 3,000. Pingle Bench, they call it Gold Bench, you understand.
Oh,
Pingle was well known in the camp. And there was an old fellow close by. Pingle was old then too. And I was the only chitty, I was supposed to say. There was a potter with another nice old fellow. So he was living close by. So him used to come to my cabin every day, so I told Potter, what do you say? If you go in with us this winter, sure, I'd be life blessed. Remember, I don't say we'll make anything. But anyhow, we might get help to get grub. He says, okay, and I talked to Pingle, okay. So Pingle and Potts was on the hole, we sunk a whole 40 feet deep, and didn't get much. So, we had a little streak out of thing going up like that on the rim. I followed that till we got tired, and then we sunk a hole on it. It was only 15 feet deep. So they'd worked and took out the money, open cut above, you understand. So Pingle said, you're awful close to the open cut to us, all right, we'll keep it going. So we kept them going, and one day I was working the hole in the lower hall. I started candlesticking with a candle, you see. You know what that is.
No.
Looking on top of bedrock, like this.
With a candle?
I ran into 2 chunks of gold.
Yeah.
Well, before this, I ran into a good spot. I got a few $100 nugget, $125, $150. I don't remember how much the big chunks were there. Besides, the rest was coarse. But remember, it was only a spot. So I started like this, and there was a slab laying this way. You know, a piece of bedrock or something. And here I run into 2 pieces of wood, like this. So I told Carson Pingle, I hammered out the pipe. I said, come down, see it. I haven't pulled it out, so Koss came down. He couldn't climb the ladder. He found the rheumatism. It was only 15.
Hmm?
He was only 15 feet deep.
Couldn't go down?
No. So Pingle used to load him. Well, just to load him down. And he came there, he wore glasses. Wait up till I get my glasses clean. So Pingle says, he was standing by, I see it from here, 2 pieces, I moved the candle. So Koss got hold of him, we had lots of fun. I rolled Koss over. Koss was just about around as he was high. Fellow.
Yeah.
2 of them fine fellow. So I waited and I said, I couldn't get it out. So I said, I left the pick at the shaft. And I went and got the shaft pick. Also tried to get it, he got. I pulled it out to a one piece. $1,164. I got from the mint.
Mm-hmm.
We made pretty good that way.
And what creek's this on?
On Nolan Creek.
Nolan?
Yeah. A junction it is.
Nolan.
Like this. Nolan.
That's above or below Wiseman?
Oh, about 10 miles from Wiseman.
10 miles above?
Yeah. Yes, Miss Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Nolan.
You had to go to Wiseman to get your supplies.
Yeah.
Who was the storekeeper?
Last time, NC Company.
NC was in Wiseman?
Yeah, NC was Wiseman.
Oh.
Yeah. Brown was the manager.
Brown?
Yeah.
Oh, and the NC had a store in Wiseman.
I got a clock that Brown was going to leave. And said, Bob, how much will you give me? I used to play a solo with him and everything. Mm-hmm. He said, how much you give me for the clock, Bob? $1. No. I gave 5 for it years ago. He said to me, so you can have it for 5. Don't be down, I'll get it for $1 from your wife. So I didn't think no more, you know, we were talking. And I went home. The first thing I knew, Collins had bought it. Well, I knew that by Collins. He bought it for Brown for $5. Well, Brown was anxious to sell everything he could before he left, you know,
sure.
You couldn't blame him.
Sure.
So, pretty soon when I see Collins, I gave Collins $5 for the clock. It was there for many years. And my partner, Harvey, there was a watchmaker there that died, and Harvey bought some stuff from him to fix watches, material. So Harvey didn't know nothing but watches, only practice, and he got good. The old clock had stopped. So he got hold of the clock. He said, I don't know when I'll bring it back, no difference either. I said. So he brought it back, and by golly, it's going ever since. Yeah, I don't know how old it is.
You have it up there now.
1915.
Who name some of the other characters around that Wiseman, the empty store at that time?
Well, I did not know John Butterwich.
Oh, you knew John Butterwich?
His father.
His father.
I didn't know him, but he was there.
He was there.
The first year I was there.
Oh, the first year?
Yeah, if I knew him, I don't remember him.
Yeah, yeah.
Sam Dubin came to the store after English.
Sam Dubin took it after Brown left?
I think it was English.
The NC backed out?
Oh, yeah, he backed out. I think so. I don't remember for sure. I think so. Sam Dubin was there anyhow. He had a store at Lattler, and he had a store at Bethel.
I can remember Sam Dubin talking on the radio all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
When was you went in there on foot?
Yeah.
When did you come out the first time?
I don't remember. I came with metaplane first time.
That's what I want to know. Did you walk out the first time or fly out?
I came with metaplane, flying out ever since.
You don't know who the pilot was?
No, I don't.
Most likely Wien.
Oh, yeah, Wien. I know that. And very likely Noel Wien, too.
Very likely Noel, yes.
But I wouldn't say for sure, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that meant they had a field there at
Wiseman. They landed on the bar.
They just landed on the bar.
Yeah. And then the people went to work and made the field themselves.
That's where the present field
no,
is.
No, it isn't.
No.
They made another one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you flew out the first time. You came to Fairbanks.
Yeah, came to Fairbanks.
How long did you stay?
Oh, no. Maybe 2 weeks or something like that.
Buy new provisions and go back.
Yeah, no, I didn't buy much provisions. Only a few things you couldn't get in McCaycook, you know.
That's what I was getting. That's what I was getting after. Can you? Yeah. It didn't pay you to buy groceries down here and ship them up yourself.
No,
you'd buy them right from Sam Dubin.
Yeah, Sam Dubin. Well, there was. If you want to buy groceries, you have to send outside to get them. You know, that is if you want to make any money on them.
Mm-hmm. So there was boats ran clear up to Wiseman.
Oh, yeah.
All of Sam's freight came in.
Yeah, by your scouts, you see. From Bethel. Horses and scouts.
Oh, horses and
scouts.
Oh,
yeah.
It was Stern Wheeler to Bethel.
Yeah.
And then horses and scouts took it the rest of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So then there was a horse trail along the bank of the river.
They would cut it, you know, so the horses would walk. When the brush was overlaid, you know, I made several trips to vessels too for load of grub. Things you couldn't get at Wiseman, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's the mileage from Wiseman to Bethel?
60 miles.
Oh, 60 miles?
By the trail.
Mm-hmm. Any bear up in that country?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any experiences with them?
Not very much. Twice I had a really experience with them.
Tell us about them.
Well, the jeep, Harvey sent a jeep up for me, and I left it in town once, and I told two friends of mine to bring it up when the grub came. So they did. And there was another cabin, the pictures in there, I was there. Leave it in that cabin, but don't lock the door. I'm going there pretty soon. And I put it down the cellar. So there was a fellow there, an old-timer from Eagle, Bill Kirkpatrick, there with me. So Bill and I were talking, and the dogs were barking. And I said, Bill, there's a caribou there. By golly, I said, I'll tell you, the caribou steak would be awful good. So I went out there with a rifle. Bill says, well, what we can't keep right now, we'll try it. Pretty hot. So when I went there, I was going to take a movie, and I've been taking movies, and I was going to take the caribou's picture first. So just when I get close to the cabin, I seen the door was open. I told him to close it, and by gosh, here's a bear such him could have been standing on her hind leg, you understand? Looks right up me, and in she went. So I dropped the movie quick. No, the rifle I had to kill the caribou. I dropped the rifle quick, and I went back to get the movie, get a picture of her. But I had pictures of the caribou already, that's a stopper. So, when I came with the movie, my goodness, you know, I got the rifle, of course, too, and I put a shell in it and held it in one hand. The old man just took her head right there, and away she went. She took the back window frame and all out with her.
And weather, huh? Yeah.
Another time I thought I'd been baking, and I thought there's a moose by the window. So I got up and I opened the door, and there was two bears.
Two?
Yeah, two of them together now. And they went. I never got a shot.
They run?
Yeah. Everything from here runs.
Lots of moose up there?
Quite a few. But they're getting kind of scared.
How many winters have you spent in the Koyukuk?
Well, since 1915. And let's see, I worked about 5 or 6 winters during the war. Firing at lab here.
Building what?
Firing boilers at lab.
Firing boilers at lab?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, the pilot for the army there.
Can you name your neighbors around there?
Wiseman?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Wanamaker's an old timer. He was there ahead of me. He's the only one alive now. There's Oliver Chappelle there. He's a, might as well say, a newcomer. Right now, I'll tell you, there's Harry Leonard in town. Vincent Noor.
Earl Boise there?
Earl Boise is on Linda. Very nice man. Him and Mamie.
Mamie, his
yeah.
little native boy.
Yeah, yeah. Very nice people.
I met him up at Umiat. They had this airport at Umiat for a week. How far above Wiseman are they?
About 14 miles.
14 miles.
As near as I know. I've been up there many times.
If I flew up to Wiseman, I'd have to walk the 14 miles.
No, he's got a...
You got a field right there
in
the cabin.
Yeah. Yes, a field under the cabin. Very nice one, and another one.
What do they do for a living?
They're mining.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, trapping in the winter. You knew about him, boys, yeah?
I met him up at Umiat when I was up there in the oil companies. He and his wife were operating the Umiat field for Ween. And I flew in and out of there with him and flew up to Anantuvich Pass a lot.
Don't you think he's a very nice man?
Very nice.
I surely
I like you. Mamie too.
Yeah, I do too. Huh? Mamie was a little kid when I went there. She had a sister. Everybody thought they were twins, but they wasn't.
Yeah?
Yeah. And we used to play ball. I was young too. I'd help the kids. You know, there was a school there. And Mamie and her sister would always come to my side. I never have to ask them anything.
Yeah, she operated the radio better than the white folks did up there in Umiat, I thought. She's very smart.
Yeah, very smart. Her sister died. Chandra. Yeah, and you're chucking nothing off once in a while?
No, we're talking all the time. Now we'll continue our conversation, and Sam White just walked in on us, and Bob says he's going to tell us a good story about Sam White.
Well, when Sam was game warden, I forgot where his office was. I think in the post office building, was it, Sam?
Yep.
And I went there once. I knew Sam. Sam and I were good friends always. I said, Sam, I don't remember what I plugged, a $10 bill or something on the counter, and I said, I want a license. Sam opened the drawer there and pulled out some papers. By the way, Bob, are you a citizen? I didn't come here to answer questions. I came here to get a license. Well, by God, if I ever catch you with a gun, I'll go to jail. That's the way it happened.
Well, did he sell you a license?
No. The
big bum. He was doing,
huh? Lame puppy then, you know. I flew lost with Sam when he was flying for Wien.
When he was flying for Wien, yeah. Huh? Well, I've flown with him a few times myself.
Yeah, I never got a license from him. He was going to nail me if he caught me with a gun. I told Sam I'll pull my hat out for you any time. You're doing your duty. Isn't that right, Sam?
That's right.
Too bad he didn't need you for a deputy sometime. He'd have to give you a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
When did you first meet Sam?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Don't remember. Where was it? How long ago?
Wasn't very long after the planes came start flying. I don't remember when.
Early 30s, I guess.
Yeah.
When did you get rid of your last dog team?
Oh, boy, no. When I was in the hospital, yeah, the last dog died.
The last dog died while you was in
couple
the hospital?
A couple of years ago, yeah.
Just a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
He was old.
Mm-hmm. What was his name?
Chena.
Chena. And now we will stop for refreshments.
Coming down.
We're coming down to Koyukuk
yeah,
now with
yeah.
Sam in a plane.
Yeah, from the pilot, and I was with him, passenger for Faber. And boys, he started going down. I thought he was putting her down. Oh, just going above the ice, you know, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden he says, watch the water go. And boys, sheets of water going off them wings. I never would believe it like I think. Icing conditions, sometimes it starts to go on.
Well, what took place?
We iced up at a little altitude, and then we come down low right next to the ground with a warm, stretchy van, and it just melted right off.
It melted right off.
Yep.
Sheets of it going off.
Sheets of it.
Yeah. Wasn't it, sir?
Yep.
Inversion. Where were you headed for?
Fairbanks.
Fairbanks. Hmm. I think you must have had a girlfriend in Fairbanks.
No.
He had a lot of them.
No. I was a good boy.
When's the first time you flew to Wiseman, Sam?
1921.
21.
Flew to Wiseman.
21.
And I think Lucille Avery was a school teacher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lucille Avery?
Yeah.
No? They didn't have a marshal up there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think Green was there then, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, it's green or Hackensack.
Green?
Yeah, real green. Poker green.
Well, now, Sam, you're a good one to ask. We had a speaker on just before Bob, the Sister Hubert, one of the Catholic sisters teaching in the school here. She was born in Fairbanks and raised in Tolabana. And in her talk on the tape, she's telling us about when her mother was taken by horse-drawn sled from Tolabana so she would be in the hospital at St. Joseph's Hospital in time for her to be born. And they left Tolabana and they came and had a night stop. She can't recall the place that they stopped overnight between Tolabana and Fairbanks. But the next day, they make it into Esther. It was a terrible rough road, and she's heavy with child, and she was able to ride a car from there on in. Now, this is 1911.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what route did they take
they
that brought them into Esther and not come up Gulfstream and bypass Esther?
They probably came to, they must have come to Dunbar, come right across the flats to Dunbar. And then from Dunbar, Esther would be the next place they'd hit.
Then you would climb up over the hill and down into Esther instead of coming around.
Probably because there was people living there. See, that road would be kept up. There was people on Esther Creek then.
This is the finish of a talk in the Donnelly home by Bob Jones of the Koyukuk. We were interrupted and unable to proceed or finish his talk. So this concludes three speakers on this tape.